Welcome to the Droma Preventative Health Podcast, hosted by the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association. We provide you with up-to-date information on health topics geared towards the Orthodox Jewish community. This podcast content is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for the medical advice of a physician.
Welcome to the Jewish Orthodox Woman, or JOMA, podcast. I'm your host, Elisa Minkin. I'm a general pediatrician and proud JOMA member, and I'm really excited and honored to be here today with Rabbi Reuven Becker. Hi.
Hello.
Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's an honor and pleasure. I have to tell you that you filled the dream of a former boss of mine. It's hard to believe that at one point in time, New York City had a Shomer Shabbos physician serving as its commissioner of health. His name was Lowell Bellin. He had recruited me to be the director of long-term care review, monitoring the quality of all the nursing home beds in Manhattan under a federal program called PSRO. A brilliant man, he was active in the County Medical Society, New York Academy of Medicine, led Columbia University's public health program. Dr. Bellin's vision, which he expressed to a group of us young upstart from public health professionals, was that when we become more seasoned, we should form an association to assist others coming into the field through mentoring, networking, and educating. He's certainly failing in his grave by JOMA's meteoric accomplishments and in such a brief period of time. I'd also like to say that the very fact that you selected elder care to be worthy of focus is also telling. And this may not be so hard to believe, but I was personally stunned by some of the reactions to the topic I've heard in the past. A renowned Rav, a true Talmid Chacham, said the following. What's the problem, he said. Elder care and kibbutz ava'im? What's the problem? You keep Shabbos? You take care of your parents? It's that simple.
Oh, no.
Or a Lakewood young man serving in administrative capacity at a long-term care facility. You're writing a book on elder care and kibbutz ava'im? What possible shalos could there be? And then there's this most astounding conversation with the executive vice president of a major, major leading Orthodox Jewish organization responding to my inquiry regarding a study we initiated on elder care or caregiving burden in the Orthodox Jewish community. After my introduction, he said unabashedly, "Can you tell me, what is a caregiver?" He had absolutely no concept or appreciation for the role of family caregiving. We've come a long way. Kudos to you, the program organizers, to JOMA, Yasha Kochachem, for your insightfulness, sensitivity, and exemplary abilities to make your vision a reality. So again, it's an honor and privilege to be here.
Thank you so, so much. And this is actually a hugely, hugely important topic. I mean, I actually feel guilty because I'm a pediatrician and I tend to go to the children topics, but this is really important. And I actually did a talk with a geriatric psychiatrist. It's called Aging in Place, and it talks about aging in a time of COVID. And that was really from a mental health perspective, but there's so many other facets, and I've been meaning to talk to someone like you. So I'm going to just give I'm going to summarize a little bit of your background because you gave us a little bit already. Rabbi Reuven Becker is executive planner, author, and speaker, and you formerly were responsible for the quality of all long-term care beds in New York County under the federal government. You right. did this for over 40 years you worked in the field of gerontology. I'm going to give you a few minutes. In a few minutes, I'm going to give you a chance to explain how and why you started La'orech Yamim, this amazing organization, which has been around for, I believe, 19 years. We feel a little bit more about you. Rabbi Becker founded and directs La'orech Yamim, which is also called the Center for Healthy Living. He organizes seminars, written books and articles, topics from healthy aging to end-of-life care, and providing information and referral guidance. I want to tell people the website. It's www.lorechyomim.org. lorech.m.org, and there's no like lorech with no little apostrophe thing. It's just lorechyomim.org. It's an amazing website. There's a lot of information on all different aspects of elder care. And also for a donation, even a small donation, and I know I got this book, you can get the ebook version of You Are Your Parents' Keeper, Hashkafic and Halachic Insights into Elder Care in Kibbutz Avim, which, as you already alluded to, is anything but simple. So I would love to give you, there's much more I can talk about you, but I don't want to take too much of the time doing that. I want you to get a chance to start talking about how and why you started L'Orech Yamim.
Well, thank you. It really started when I was recruited to join the administrative team, among my first jobs, of a 527-bed geriatric center here in Long Island. Equipped with an MBA, MS, and rabbinic ordination, I became the point person for addressing and resolving family complaints and concerns regarding all aspects of service delivery. And also, not unrelated, I am a veteran caregiver. I served as a primary physician, primary family caregiver for both my parents for a period of over 12 years. Supplemented as well, serving as a backup caregiver to my wife when she was a caregiver for her parents. Both of them are Zichron Levracha, unfortunately not with us. Our first program under L'Orech Yamim was choosing a nursing home, cultural competence, halakhic issues, and practical considerations. It was part of a Caring for Our Elder seminar series, integrating rabbinic and professional expertise and bringing it to the community. Typically, before that, there certainly were seminars, but the seminars were really among professionals and among consumers. There had not been, before 1999, that's when we started, to have this information brought directly to consumers. The model has been replicated, and frankly, you should have seen the expression of amazement among the rabbis and professionals in that particular room for our first program. We looked around the hall, and it was a standing room only crowd.
Wow.
Well, the thing is that I experienced all the life cycle events relating to elder care personally, experiencing the losses. And just as I had struggled, I knew that the community was struggling with the challenges of fulfilling the mitzvah. So that was really the background of my founding the L'Orech Yamim program. Our topic is filling the void for Orthodox seniors and their families, we had discussed. And I'd really like to perhaps take the liberty of broadening it to include not only L'Orech Yamim's role, but also what JOMA members can do to help in filling the void, which I will get to further on in our program. I know you wanted to talk about some of the basics. What should adult children today have in place right now to help in protecting aging parents so that they live independently and comfortably and are able to access support services to age in place? First off, of course, you need to have a family internist, preferably one with geriatrics as a background. Secondly, I would encourage that you periodically conduct an environmental assessment. That's a formal home safety review of the parents' living quarters. This is often done by an occupational therapist or nurse, but it can also be self-administered. It's a checklist to find and correct hazards for every room and area in your home, including entrance, backyard, garage, that might cause you to trip or fall, such as unstable railing, unsafe steps on the outside entrance, insufficient lighting, cluttered area, presence of unstable furniture, etc. Loose wires. I have a form here with me, which I could share to your listeners for their use, or they can go online. I'm sure that if they Google the environmental assessment safety form, they will find their own. What I like about this form is that it has pictures for each area, entrances, hallways, kitchens, identifies problems, then offers solutions. Also, I reached out to an outstanding occupational therapist, a longstanding member of our Laurel Human Network, who graciously offered to visit your home if it's within reasonable driving time from the Queens area, or she could walk you through the process over the telephone. If you're interested to have her contact you, please email me at my email address, which is loiscenter@yahoo.com. Again, that's loiscenter@yahoo.com. And I'll be glad to put you in touch with her.
That's amazing.
Thirdly, okay, I'm giving it to you as much as I can. Thirdly,
I'm taking notes.
Okay. Thirdly, I would encourage that you have an executed halachic living will, also known as advanced directive and healthcare proxy. I'm sure you've heard a lot about it. Both the RCA and Aguda versions are available as downloads on our website. You click on the resource tab, and they're in the first items there. They're also included as inserts in the book that you so graciously referenced in your intro. These are legally binding documents to assure that the medical team of providers comply with your instructions as to your preferences for healthcare intervention in the instance, chas v'shalom, that you become incapacitated and unable to express your opinion regarding the medical intervention that you would prefer. Without one, the medical team may make decisions on their own contrary to halacha, such as elect not to perform surgery or other medical interventions not consistent with your wishes. In the absence of such documents, the healthcare institution may implement policies of their own management, or the ethics committee may not adhere to the wishes, advice, or requests of family caregivers. It's very important actually to register it online in a database. Again, if you download the Aguda version, Aguda made arrangements with an organization for free downloading and access. This is important because without having access to the halachic living will, the providers, whoever the parent or you may be receiving care, will not know your wishes. So it's important to do that.
I have a question. So yeah. You're not talking about doing it for yourself. You're talking about getting your elder relative, right? I mean, you should do it for yourself.
Actually, too. I was about to say that I've even had my children do it, okay? Mm-hmm. Because I believe it's something that everyone needs to do. It's not just an elder care issue. It can happen at any time. I mean, you don't have getting hurt walking in the street. It can happen. There's no discrimination, okay, any age.
Right. I mean, I think what's very difficult about this is it's obvious, but it's hard to face your mentality. I had printed these out. I was intending to do it, and that was maybe 10 years ago. But what I was going to ask was, besides the fact that I think it's important for everybody to do this, and I'm glad you said that, is how would you engage in a conversation with your, say, elder parents who haven't done it?
Well, it depends on the context. Let me think of a few contexts. You could say, I just attended a program and frankly, it really stirred me that how important it is to have this document, and I don't have it. And I care about you. I want you to do it. I'm doing it myself. As a matter of fact, right. I'll do it together with you, at the same time. And we'll be on the same page.
Right, literally, right.
Yeah, the key also is to elect. Actually, I recommend having two physicians, but to have some people write an organization, but you really have to touch base with them. I have my Rav, but it's important to have actually two Rabbanim on tap. I'll tell you what happened with me personally. Well, my mother had been in the hospital and she needed a certain intervention, and I have two brothers who are also rabbis. And, I should also mention that it's important to select a Rav that your whole family agrees upon. Because you have different, you know, siblings may have different hashkafas and or different rabbis. And unfortunately, I know of a case, one time, I'm sure it's not the only case, but, a parent was ill. One brother asked one Rav regarding the proper intervention, and a brother asked another Rav, and they did what brother A did, and the parent passed away, and now they don't talk to each other anymore. Mm. So it's important to have a consensus of who you're going to go to. And getting back to my story, my mother was in a hospital, and I'm in here in New York. My brothers are out of town, and there was some issue. And my Rav at that point actually was out of town as well. He was giving a shiur someplace out of town, and luckily I was able to find another Rav who was able to present some of the halachic issues to my brother, so that we could all agree on what should be done. So I would say from the halachic living will, what you write in there, you yourself should perhaps try to have two rabbanim available as backups. Okay, I mentioned the geriatrician, the environmental assessment, halachic will, living will. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also a formal will. My book actually has a full discussion on how to design one that's compliant to halacha with an accompanying blank forms for your use. Actually, that whole discussion was really a transcription of a shiur that Rabbi Mordechai Willig, Rosh Yeshiva, provided for us, that is L'Aruch Yomi, in one of my programs, and he reviewed it and signed off on it, so you can feel comfortable that it's compliant with the latest halachic authorities. Mm-hmm. It's also been reviewed by my rabbi, Rabbi Albaum. So, but any firm estate lawyer, okay, estate planner will have the form because it's a standard form, and they'll be able to. But that's something that's important because without the additional section of adaptation and amendment, you may be violating halacha, so you just want to be careful about that. Another item to consider is long-term care insurance. It's not for everyone. It's very expensive, but can be very valuable to the family in protecting parents' hard-earned assets from being eaten away by paying for long-term care services. I have to say that the cutoff for someone to obtain long-term care insurance at this point is 79 years old.
Oh, wow.
So that there's no policy available after that age. Anyone interested in additional information on the topic can contact me. There's no standard on the – it's really a very personal decision. And it's related to the assets you need to protect. Again, if someone would like to reach out to me, they can email me, and I'd be glad to share his name and information. I'm not getting any commission. I just feel that if there's someone that has competent good, we're doing both parties a service by making the connection.
And I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering if besides long-term care insurance, there is something about removing assets at some point from a person.
Yes, that's my next topic. Okay. Very good. The next item is called an irrevocable trust. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that is, it requires a specialized lawyer, mm-hmm, and an understanding by your parents that in its fullest sense, they are relinquishing control of their finances to the trustee, which typically is that you, okay, the child, and then you become fully responsible for paying all their bills. The instrument is used to maintain the integrity of hard-earned assets or the estate or the inheritance for the beneficiaries. In the instance that the parent loses full cognitive functioning, as well as facilitating access to home care and other state income-related entitlements. Again, if listeners are interested in the names of lawyers, they can reach out to me, but I would imagine that any estate planning lawyer would be knowledgeable and competent to prepare the document. Is that what you're referring to? I mean,
Yes. I mean, I have a daughter with special needs and there's special needs trust, so it sounds like a parallel. Yeah.
Yes.
And this wouldn't be for somebody who is of complete sound, you know, mind. This would be for someone who already, right, needs someone to manage.
No. It's before that. It's at a point where the person is feeling that they don't want to be bothered anymore. It's too much of a burden. Also, if there is some thought of at some point in time applying for Medicaid support, okay, this serves to remove all assets from the applicant's holdings. So.
Right, but they would have to be willing and understanding that they were giving that up.
Yes, and that's right, and that's the challenge, and that's the. I mean, the fact is, personally myself, okay, I have plans to do an irrevocable trust at some point in time. I do, but I don't want to do it today. I'm not interested in having my children. Take care of my assets at this point, but as I get older, it would make sense to do that. Because, first of all, there are concerns when someone loses their cognitive functioning that they may not be making right decisions in making investment decisions. There's concern with that. And there's also, again, there's the ability of accessing Medicaid supports. Now, I have to mention, relating to Medicaid supports, New York State, and I know many of listeners are not in New York State, but there are people who are moving out of New York State. I think they have to consider if they are if they're very wealthy, it doesn't really matter, okay? But if you're middle income, you need to consider the scope of services and entitlements you might get under Medicaid in another state. New York is very generous. It's known to be generous. Some of the surrounding states are not so generous. I have a brother who lives in Arizona that's not so generous. I mean, I don't know about Florida. But those are things you need to consider if you're looking to retire. Separate from the fact that ultimately your children will be required or wanting to try to help you should you become frail, and that's what happens.
You know what I'm thinking is that these are hard conversations to have, and they're even harder if you've waited too long.
I don't know. Well, I don't know if it's hard if you waited too long. I don't know if it's hard if you waited too long. I think it's they can be done. I mean,
what I mean by is if you can speak to your parents and say, "Hey, I want this to be a normal conversation. Every once in a while, we're going to go over things how they are, and we're going to talk about some of these things." As opposed to when you already see that your parents are forgetting things or, you know, accidents are happening or something like that. That's what I meant.
Right. And if so, oh, you mean in terms of whether you can get an irrevocable trust executed?
Well, I mean, the whole thing. I mean, you're listing a whole bunch of things, and I think a lot of right. people don't think about them or talk about them early enough. It's like you said, if we can sit down with our parents and say, hey, I'm also going to do my halachic living will, because that's not something I need to wait for. I'm going to do it now.
Right. Well, let me just share with you what happened with my parents. Didn't have much assets, and we didn't have an irrevocable trust. But my in-laws had some assets, and the fact, though, is I guess his friends were doing it, okay? He set up the irrevocable trust on his own. Wow. He had the lawyer. He called my wife and us down to a meeting where he asked that my wife sign as a trustee. He did it on his own. I guess all his friends were like together. This was like Holocaust Survivor Group and whatever it is, they did it, and he did it. It also helps as far as if there are assets with regard to inheritance taxes somehow. I don't know exactly how technically, okay, but I'm just sharing there's another component to it. I should also mention with regard to long-term care insurance premiums, there's also a tax write-off in New York State for some of that premium expense. I think I wouldn't say it's too late.
I didn't mean to imply it's too late. I'm just saying that earlier would be better.
Yeah, sure.
You know, some people don't know.
I think an easy way of doing it is that, I mean, not an easy way, but one way I would think perhaps you could do it is that you're reading an article someplace about it, and you show it to your parent, you say, hey, you know what, look at this. Maybe we should be doing this. I don't know. What do you think? Then you leave the room. You're not even there. Okay. Right. Now, read the article and then say, hey, you come back and say, what do you think about it? I'm just sharing a thought. I mean, perhaps that's the way to do it. I mean, it's, I'll tell my wife, do you see this book review? You might find it interesting.
Right. Leave it lying around.
That's a way of doing it, I think.
Right. It's sensitive and it's tricky. It's sensitive and it's tricky for others.
It is. Somebody called it the elephant in the room. Okay. Okay.
I'm seeing that elephant right now.
Right. It's difficult. Much of this is difficult.
Right. I would say talking to your parents about their financial planning for their end of life has got to be one of the most challenging.
Right. I bet, you know, one of the things that they say is, you know, we really care about you. I mean, sometimes you even have a grandchild, if there is one, to talk to the parent about things. Okay, I mean, they're talking about how to get your parent to stop driving, okay, when you know that a technique that was suggested, you get a grandchild to talk to the parent. I personally, I'm not going to have a problem. Okay, because I don't like driving. Okay, but my in-laws had a major problem. It was in battle, and it's not unusual, pretty common to have that battle. I'll give you one of his lines. He says, "What do you want from me? I didn't hit a car in 2 weeks."
Right. So this is actually a good segue into another set of topics, as we talked about aging in place. And right. I'm curious to what Laura Chaimim offers in this area.
Okay. Well, I what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, I just want to finish my list. Okay.
Okay. You have more.
I will talk about aging in place, but you were asking me what are the things that you need to have in place now. Okay.
Okay.
There's another item. Okay, which I think I mentioned already, but I want to reinforce it, okay? Oh, there are actually two more items, okay? One is not to underestimate the importance of facilitating and monitoring to assure that parents remain active. You're talking about what you should be doing, attending courses, lectures, go to shul. And finally, as I mentioned earlier, you need to select a Rav, okay, who's familiar with your family and an expert in medical halacha for advice and direction. Now, do you really need a Rav at this stage? Separate from the halachic living will, okay, the question, do you need a Rav at this stage? And I say yes. Mm-hmm. Let me share you some examples. I'm not talking end-of-life issues. That's besides the point. You walk in and you check and notice mom hasn't taken her medication. You remind her. She refuses. You get into an argument. How forceful can or should you be with her without breaching mitzvahs kibud av v'aim? Here's another one. You arrange for home care for your mother. And this actually happened to me. I felt totally relieved. I go to work and get a call from the home care agency. My mother refuses to let the home attendant into the house. It's not an infrequent call. It's the million-dollar question. Some will walk away and shrug and say, what can I do? My mother refuses. But is that the correct response? Discussing it with a rabbi will provide you with the needed guidance to assure that you are doing the right thing if you are one who is concerned about complying with mitzvahs kibud av v'aim. As a matter of fact, that's one of the that's a hypothesis of a pilot study I initiated with regard to caregiver burnout. That's another, well, I don't know if we'll get to it, but in any event, you do need to have a Rav in place, okay?
Right.
In my circumstance, I called my family Rav, with whom I had grown up with and who knew my parents. And his response to me was, when you were an infant, you cried when your mother tried to feed you. She knew what is best for you. Now it's your turn. If it's an issue of safety and well-being, you need to be forceful. I invited this Rav, this rabbi, to speak at a forum I organized in Elder Care. The question was posed, and he did not want to answer it publicly. Implicit was that it is not an all-size-fits-all answer. It needs to be done on a case-by-case basis, depending on circumstances. However, when I share my experience with desperate callers, it gives them solace, and they thank me for the direction. Consultation with a Rav is also indicated when considering need for institutional care. Basically, you indeed are your parent's keeper, which is the title of the book. There's a Torah obligation to care for a parent. However, if the child cannot attend due to lack of training or ongoing friction existing between the parents, then it's best for the child to remove himself or herself from the scene. If you are unable to attend to a parent with warmth and compassion, then you will not be fulfilling the mitzvah. The opposite is the result. It's an aveira, a zilzul of the mitzvah. So the advice is discuss your circumstances with a Rav, get a psak, you'll feel better later about yourself. So what I'm saying is do not go it alone. Develop a relationship with a rabbi for guidance and support, as well as a professional with expertise in the field. He can be a friend, an associate, someone in the community. You're all clinicians, so you already have a network of associates from whence to draw. But be aware, complications typically occur without advance notice. You don't need to have a formal agreement with anybody, so long as you have numbers to call when needed. Okay, so now to your next point was how do you access or what structured support? How do you access structured support?
Right, because I mean, I think you tell me to build a team. I mean, you're already saying, you know, part of your team is the doctor, part of your team is your Rav, but right. I'm presuming there's other members.
An excellent question. There's a field of specialized social workers and nurses trained and certified as geriatric care managers that have proven to be invaluable to families seeking guidance and direction from an expert. They'll address the full scope of caregiving, finding local resources, advocating for a parent should they be in a facility, legal planning, even helping in resolving family conflict, making decisions with regard to housing, and even that environmental assessment that I mentioned earlier. The downside is that they're not reimbursable from Medicare or insurance companies. It's a private pay situation. And if you're in a low income bracket, it's really not feasible. But yes, the support of a case manager may become necessary and will certainly provide relief from the ongoing pressures and the complexities of family caregiving. So that should be included as an option.
There's limited time. I want to focus on points you'd probably not hear anyplace else,
okay.
Those that are particularly relevant to this group of physicians. Okay, in terms of selecting structured support services when the need arises, such as home care, nursing home placement, assisted living, I'd start with your local family physician, geriatrician, as his patients or her patients will have given him feedback. A private home attendant may be found locally, networking through shuls, associates. There are federal and state websites with a wealth of information that is helpful. I have to underscore the fact that our federal, state, and local oversight agencies, needless to say, have difficulty in monitoring and measuring quality, so that the information that you garner off the sites, as well as marketing pitches you will be exposed to, still require considerable due diligence on your part. Again, I'll give you examples. Here are comments I heard directly from families whose parents were in CMS-certified five-star nursing homes. CMS is a federal program, it stands for Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services. These incidents occurred at both nonprofit and for-profit homes. At the completion of the midnight shift, nursing left and there was no one to relieve for close to an hour. Another, I saw patients lined up unattended, waiting, begging to be taken to the bathroom. They gave the wrong medication instruction when my mother was transferred to the hospital. The medicine was for her heart condition, which she never had. My daughter caught it when they were moving her to the hospital. They did drug her up so she wouldn't bother them. In addition, when she was served breakfast and lunch, she was asleep because of the drugs. They didn't care that she had nothing to eat. They very rarely changed her, only after continuous nagging. I think they should not be in the healthcare business. Instead, they should work in a factory where there are no people. I can give you more and more examples. Okay. By the way, a prominent consumer advocate whose full-time professional career is dedicated to nursing quality said to me, I never use the five-star rating. It's meaningless. I dig deeper and compare the other elements CMS provides to offer advice to consumers. Now, also, none of the problems that I mentioned, I have a list, and frankly, it's in my newsletter. None of these problems get incorporated into the database because they weren't reported. But what's going on here? They're rated as five star, okay? But you have to read the fine print. Mm-hmm. Their scale is a relative value scale. The services delivered are measured compared to others in a nation and the state. So my problem and which I'm sharing, which I've been trying to correct, is that to me and you, when I hear five star, what conjures up in my mind is excellence, outstanding. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get the attention of the powers to change that scale, because let it be a six star, eight star, nine star, three star, but when you hear five stars, and you'll see it advertised, okay, five stars. Well, you know, in our culture, five stars means outstanding and excellence, but in practice, this five star is not excellence. The observations I made were done a number of years ago, and since then, CMS has plugged up some of the holes in the data collection, such as self-reporting. And 2021, CMS changed its platform to Care Compare, and it's a great improvement. But, okay, if you read their the fine lines on their website, in the technical users guide, January 2021, CMS bases five-star quality ratings in the health inspection domain on the relative performance of facilities within a state. So is it reasonable to expect consumers to see rated five stars by CMS advertised by a facility to appreciate that it's not a statement of excellence? When you see five star, what do you envision? Outstanding performance. Consumers are being misled by the scale. Last week, I was asked to research a facility by a family calling for assistance in choosing a nursing home. This was a five-star rated nursing home. Let me share with you under the skin data that is available on our website. Okay. Of this particular five-star nursing home. Percentage of residents who are at or above an expected ability to care for themselves at discharge. Okay. 47%, which means they did not reach the national average. The national average happens to be 53%. Percentage of long-stay residents whose ability to move independently worsened. Okay, 22%. Okay, percentage of long-stay residents whose need for help with daily activities has increased, 20%. Percentage of long-stay low-risk residents who lose control of their bowels or bladder, 63%. I'm not going to go on more, but the problem is that a five-star rating is not a certification of excellence. It's a normative number, a normative determination, and it really ought to be changed. They need to use a different scale. Mm-hmm. So I've communicated the issue with CMS, national advocacy groups, and through our newsletter. I share this with you so that you be aware of the ratings limitations, whether for personal needs or assisting others, and of course, encourage you to investigate the matter on your own. And if convinced of the problem, encourage congressmen, senators, or whomever to change the scale. It's a tremendous disservice to the consumer. It's misleading.
How would you know, though? I mean, someone who's not in the know like you.
Well, that's the problem. But how I found out about it is because people came to me when I was, if someone calls me about a nursing home, separate from my own data, I'll call out the people I know who have been in that particular nursing home, okay? And they'll tell me, okay, hey, no shame, it's five-star rating, and they'll tell me the story. Okay, so that's how I found out. But that's my point. If you don't know, you don't know, and it's important. It's a tremendous disservice, and it should be addressed.
Are there support groups for caregivers of elderly people that would help them find out that information?
I don't know. No, I'm not sure. This is one of the Aruch Yomim's, roles to identify voids in the system and try to plug them up. I don't know if a support group would do it, but there are knowledgeable advocacy groups, okay, advocacy groups that are familiar with it, and to whom I could give you some websites and some places to connect with, okay, that would know and that you should be. There's a New York State consumer group.
It's called the Long-Term Care Community Coalition, an excellent advocacy service.
But the people listening to this, if they wanted to know more, they could call Laura Chiamming.
Sure. By all means, okay. I encourage them to.
Good. Okay. Because you know this, right? I mean, the average person just starting would not know this.
Right. That's why I'm sharing it. Okay.
Right.
Another point I'd like to share is that that Aguda has a helpful project and a guide to selecting a nursing home and rehabilitation center. It's called Chaim Aruchim.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was modeled and initiated based on the guidance that I provided their mm-hmm. vice president through formal meetings and sharing pre-publication issue of my book. There's also a heavily advertised service called A Place for Mom. You've probably heard about it, right? I just want you to be aware, and it's a good base to start, but you should be aware that I've been told that while it's free to the consumer, they get their revenue from facility payments every time they make a referral. So it may not necessarily include all the choices you need to consider. And also, once you call, you may be at risk of getting follow-up sales pitches from providers on their roster. Okay.
Is that a Jewish organization?
What, a place for mom? No. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. No. Chaim Aruchim is.
Yes.
There's much more to say on the topic. I have to touch on cultural competence, okay?
Right.
I have to share some observations. Again, it's because you're clinicians, and frankly, your membership could really play a role they have a unique role. Each one of you can potentially accomplish much more to help the cloud than even the OU or Aguda through their expansive advocacy programs. Let me tell you how. Here's what I mean. It's based on my personal experience. I'm attending a conference of 13,000 public health professionals. A prominent MD/JD, okay, is giving a very impressive PowerPoint presentation on the topic law, ethics, and the issues concerning healthcare decisions for the elderly. He comes to a section entitled Death and the Afterlife. The first line reads as follows: Judaism, not emphasized. Beliefs vary from no afterlife to shadowy existence to the world to come.
Mm.
The presenter was Jewish, a former commissioner of health for the state of Maryland, a Johns Hopkins graduate. Naturally, I went over to him after the session, introduced myself, respectfully corrected the misinformation, and asked for his contact email. Here is the response to my email. Rabbi Becker, thank you for responding with such a nice note and for sending the materials on halachic advanced directives. As I mentioned during the presentation, allowing for each individual to determine his or her own destiny during the end stages of life is really the purpose of the ethical principle of autonomy that we discussed at length. By the way, I should mention this principle of autonomy is somewhat of a challenge for some people at certain points in time, because frankly, it suggests that we don't need to consult with a rav for certain halachic interventions when it comes up in medical care. I was glad, he continues, I was glad you brought to us this issue because it underscores the notion that each person being able to make a decision consistent with his ideals of faith and faith. I would love to continue our conversation. I know I would learn a lot. I was raised in a conservative congregation. My wife Barbara and I now are members of a progressive reform congregation. I participate in our volunteer choir and enjoy attending occasional Torah portion classes on Saturday mornings. From the care and deliberation you gave to the words of your follow-up note to me, I am aware of your scholarship and sensitivity. You have a skill set that defines compassion, and I will very much appreciate if you have the time to perhaps set a time for a future phone conversation to get to know one another. We both have had, I would think, very different backgrounds, but share an interest in making this world a better place by contributing in our own special way with our own unique talents. I hope we can learn from one another in the future, and I think we could both find it inspiring. I look forward to you. Signed, X, Y, and Z, Medical Director. I'm sharing this because each member of your organization has the potential of having similar experiences.
I see.
But what I mean by similar experiences is the following. I've attended programs in the New York Academy of Medicine and other venues, presented poster sessions on cultural competence, and every time the response is not hostility, not anger, not don't bother me, it's appreciation. Right. It's a thank you. I didn't know that, including from Jewish professors. You have no idea how many Jewish professionals are out there making decisions or having can influence decisions that relate to the ethic committee's decisions and can impact on the cloud. So it does matter. And because the venue of attending conferences and attending roundtables is in such an innocuous setting, sitting next to a colleague, schmoozing, attending roundtables. They're very conducive to both learning and educating. So mm-hmm. my message is to encourage you, meaning the membership, whenever feasible, to attend conferences that addresses topics that may impede on our traditional practice and voice your opinion and educate current and future practitioners for the benefit of the cloud. It's not something the OU, the Aguda can do. It's something that you can do.
I mean, I would think this is true because remember, this talk is for not just JOMA members, but this is for anyone, right? So what you're saying is be an ambassador.
Exactly. That's the word. By an ambassador, by example. That's exactly the word that I was about to use. Okay, become a role model and ambassador and teach colleagues regarding our traditions or practices by your example.
But this is true for anybody, right? Any of us, any person listening can do this. Anybody who's involved in this world.
Well, can do what? I mean, you don't have access to going into a conference with physicians. We're talking about healthcare delivery. Okay, we're talking about decision makers in healthcare delivery. So that when you're an ambassador to someone who might ultimately be caring for a from person, and they know nothing about. I'll share with you an example of what happened at a roundtable discussion on end of life care. There was a psychologist from a tertiary care hospital in Manhattan that treats multitudes of Hasidic people, Jewish people, Orthodox people. And she came over to me, which she was a psychologist actually, came over to me and said she had a problem with a family. The wife who was end of life there, you know, the mantra is, why don't you let go?
I mean, that's what happens, okay, in the hospital. Unfortunately, many of you are young, you're a new organization, but it's not unusual that you have battle duty when you're an inpatient in a hospital where the clinicians are advising you to let go, okay? And she was complaining that the wife, who was her patient or patient in the hospital, said to her that she wouldn't mind letting go, and the family doesn't allow it. After I explained to her that it's not, quote, autonomy, you know, we're not in a situation where we make that type of decision. We ask our Rav, it depends on halacha. Every time I've had exchanges, whether it's even in a poster session, cultural competence, there's always been a very interest and welcoming of the information, because it's just not known. You have no idea. I just want to share that we shouldn't hesitate, and it is particularly for clinicians, I'm saying, to be to actually also, for example, join the local county medical society. Okay, not because we're all, you know, in our and that's part of what I'm trying. That's where I'm a little bit different than the other organizations. What I'm trying to say is, we want to take what's out there, bring it in, and then bring what we have and share it to others. Okay, but if you're having your own organization, that's good. But if you are able to, and you have the time, obviously, because you're busy in your practices, to become members of the county, local county medical societies, it offers an opportunity to you to be a role model. Okay, to sit next to a colleague. It's for the cloud, really. It's not for you. We're not talking about going to county medical society, you become whatever it is. I'm saying that it's a chesed for the cloud that you have, that its clinician has, that can make a difference in making a life for our brethren in the healthcare spectrum of care easier to navigate. So I'm going to go to the role of family caregivers and support for caregivers, which deserves attention. Okay, because this is a continuation of cultural competence and really getting to a little bit of the winding down. But if you go online, you'll find a huge amount of information and guidance from the federal government, the state, independent organizations such as AARP for assistance to caregivers. You'll go on AARP. There's tremendous amount of information. Some of the questions that you asked about how to approach a family member for financial issues, they're there. The information is there. They talk about it. They write about it all the time. But here's the problem. I received this, and again, I'm bringing these issues to your attention, this group, because this is a unique group, and I'm very excited to have someone to unload, because maybe you can help. Okay, but here's the problem. I received this announcement in my inbox last week. It's the following. Family caregiver training. Family caregiving for diverse elders resource hub. Caring for those who care. Okay. Free online training are available for your organizations, colleagues, and community to learn best practices to support diverse family caregivers. The Diverse Elders Coalition offers modules to support caregivers from all and or the specific following communities: African American caregivers, American Indian Alaska Native caregivers, Asian American caregivers, Hispanic caregivers, LGBT caregivers, Southeast Asian American caregivers.
I think that's the list.
That's my question. Where are we? Okay. And it's important. This is a curriculum that was developed, okay, in order to help others be more respectful of the diverse ethical, diverse racial and ethnic groups. Okay, the Diverse Elder Coalition advocates for policies and programs that improve aging in our communities
as racially and ethnically diverse people. Member organizations are National Asian Pacific Center on Aging, National Caucus and Center on Black Aging, National Hispanic Council on Aging, National Indian Council on Aging, SAGE Advocacy and Services for LGBT Elders, Southeast Asia Resource Action Center. So, it seems to me that we're missing out, just like you mentioned.
And I'm there's a void. There's definitely a void there.
We need to do a better job in communicating and advancing the needs of our elders and families in view of our traditions and practices that impact on care delivery, adherence, and outcomes. A small grassroots organization like L'Orchium cannot do it alone. We can raise the issues, but perhaps Joma may consider partnering and adding this in some form to its already ambitious preventative health agenda.
Now, this is really important, and I did not know this, so I'm really, really glad that you spelled this out.
Pleasure to share that. Okay.
We're doing another area, so why not this? Why not? I want to point out, though, that it doesn't have to just be physicians. Again, people who listen to this.
Of course not. Of course not.
Joma, we do have a lot of other professionals. I'm thinking of people who may work in these settings and say, hey, I see that there's no cultural competence here, and I work there, so I know about it. So maybe people listening to this will want to join in this effort. It could be a joint partnership with other organizations as well. It doesn't have to just
absolutely,
be Joma.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what this is. When they talk
really
about
important.
These organizations, National Asian Pacific, these are basically associations of umbrella organizations, I would imagine. They all get together. Now, if you get together, you have a voice, you have a number, you can make an impact. Okay, when L'Orchium calls up and we're a grassroots organization, okay, nice. But if a group representing thousands or tens of thousands of people or more, that has meaning.
For sure.
So that would be exciting if something can grow out of it. I'm at the end of my I'm almost finished with my remarks. If you have any other questions, I just want to again say that all your listeners are free to reach out to L'Orchium. You have the email address for any follow up or any questions or any concerns or any comments. I do have a little concluding follow up note, but if you have any other questions for me, I'd be glad to try to.
So I'm going to point out that there was so much more we could have talked about. I mean, we really didn't talk about the different options for people as they age, the different what I call like more restrictive, less restrictive settings, from being in their own home to being into, say, a family member's home, right, to being in a day program. And, you mentioned on L'Orchium that there are not enough kosher day programs. There are
absolutely
none of them.
That's right.
Most of them are in Nassau County, though. I was very impressed because I live in Nassau County.
They are. So you read my report. Oh, that's right. And I'm still on the wagon. I didn't get to it. I have another issue I can bring up, but it's just so much. But I should say, but with regard to just a quick answer to a little hint about the various levels of care. You really need to have a good relationship with a clinician to advise you whether to make that change and whether the different levels of care are appropriate for you. And the main issue also is actually obviously safety mm-hmm. concerns. And we do have so much more to talk about. There's just so much that I'd like.
Right, we didn't talk about COVID. I'm
yes,
really curious.
I know. You want to talk about COVID in a few minutes?
No.
We have time?
Oh, yeah, sure. No,
okay,
you can
fine.
Do it.
No, fine. We'll do it for next time. I just want to forget it. Forget COVID. All I can tell you is the following. There was a positive side to COVID.
Really? What?
Yeah. I think people are now going to hesitate before they put their patients into nursing homes. Okay. It's not going to be such a natural thing.
Right.
Okay. That's not all I had to say, but I just wanted to
That was my trump. Okay, so now I just want to conclude with the following. Okay, here's a story. I had designed a social adult aid program once, obviously with Orthodox Jewish programming included, and a very stately woman came from a distance in the cold winter to attend. She walks in the room, opens the door. She opened the door, and at the top of her voice, she says, "Who are you?" Well, I said, "What?" Again, she said, "Who are you?" And I thought she lost it, okay? But she explained to me later, "I don't know why I haven't heard of L'Aruch Yamin before. Why aren't you aggressively promoting yourself?" Well, I'd like to thank you, Joma, for offering an opportunity for L'Aruch Yamin to be better known. We're under the radar, and we're happy with the work that we've done. We'll be happy to work together with you and with all your listeners in helping them respond to the challenges of elder care. It is not easy. You were talking about kibud av v'aim, and as many have known, the word kibud can also be could be kaved, which is difficult. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll be happy. I hope I've given you some food for thought and for action, and I'd be happy to work with you in the future should you need me. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I want to thank you so much. This has been really, it's so important. And I just want to, first of all, thank you. Thank you for your amazing organization. I learned a lot from going on the website and reading the book. And I cannot believe that you've been around for 19 years doing this amazing work. Like I said, it's under the radar and it people should know about it more. And I really want to just point out again your action point, because I think this is for any listener. It doesn't have to be for a JOMA member per se. Reach out to L'Aruch Yamin if you want to be more involved. You can also reach out to JOMA at info@joma.org or health@joma.org. Either of those emails, you can reach out to us or to Loy, what was it, loycenter@yahoo.com?
Yes, that's good.
To reach you.
L-O-Y.
L-O-Y Center, right?
Right, like L'Aruch Yamin, L-O-Y Center.
At yahoo.com to see if, you know, if there's something that you can do to help get the word out and help us be ambassadors and get more cultural competence out there for our people as well. And I thank you so much for doing this with me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the JOMA Preventative Health Podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and share this with your friends. For more information, check out our Instagram @JOMA_org. Check out our website, www.joma.org. That's JOMA.org. Or email us at health@joma.org.